Okay, unfortunately I just gave a talk right now in another room, so I missed the previous speaker, so I may or may not be showing similar results. It might be good for discussion in terms of what we're finding here. So enhanced efficiency, urea sources, and placement effects on N2O emissions. Well, obviously this is all set in the 4Rs, and marketers have had a field day over the past century on the 4R concept, of course, and that's not the one we're going to be talking about today, but particularly the one led by Fertilizer Institute, CFIA, NE, and so forth, looking at environmental, economic, and social stewardship related with nutrient management. But one of the areas of intense research is examining the potential for reduction in emissions. There's no mouse. Oh, there it is. Potential for reduced emissions. And analyses conducted, meta-analyses done, this particularly from Duke University, was showing that great promise was related with slow-release urea, anything that would reduce the availability of the nitrogen by metering it out. So nitrification inhibitors, slow-release urea, and also subsurface placement instead of surface placement. And that was the idea because of indirect emissions related with ammonia, of course, that if you put nitrogen fertilizer below ground, then you will have less indirect emissions from N2O. But how about emissions of N2O from subsurface placement? It hasn't been studied very much, although in the northern Great Plains of Canada, it's common practice and best management practice to ban fertilizer either as a side row or a mid row. And we want to know the interaction with the enhanced efficiency fertilizers with that banning. So I think you're familiar with enhanced efficiency fertilizers where they come in stabilized nitrogen products, so additives are added like inhibitors to perform to prevent the transformation of urea or ammonium. An example is the Super U product, or controlled release nitrogen, where it's based on soil conditions. In this case, a product ESN, the temperature and moisture, will control the permeability and release of urea through a polymer coating. There's the products there, and they're colored, of course, so that way you feel good when you pay the extra money that you got something that looks good and better, right? And so our studies, we do use a static vented chamber technique where we have replicated field trials. We're using farm-type machinery for side banding, mid-row banding. So we do create slots. We do cover the slots and then press them to get good closure of that. The side band is about an inch to the side and an inch below the seed, whereas the mid-row band is, in effect, a double mid-row. So it's every second seed row in the middle, so it's double the concentration of nitrogen than we would have in the side row band. And we use the HMR program to calculate fluxes if they're nonlinear or if they're linear as well. So the experiment was done over 2 years at two sites, a sand soil site and a clay soil site. We have decent organic matter in both of these soils, as you can see. And the treatments we used was a control of no amendment of fertilizer and then urea, either broadcast incorporated. Now the broadcast incorporated was done through the incorporation was done through the seeding operation. Okay, because broadcast the urea granules, and then the seeder itself will disturb as the planter moves through the soil, mixing up the soil and planting. Then we have a side band granular urea, mid-row band granular urea, and then placement of ESN and Super U in mid-rows. About 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare was applied, and we grew hard red spring wheat. So from the 2011 on the left side here is the two soils. The arrow is the date of application of the fertilizer and seeding. And you can see shortly after, a couple of weeks later, we have emissions, and the emissions are greatest for the urea broadcast incorporated and lower for the ESN Super U mid-row banded. treatments. And it just, in our area, neck of the woods, we don't get anything with summer rains with N2O generally. It's usually post-fertilizer when rain occurs, and we had rain occur here. Notice the late planting date, day 160. We're talking planting in early June here. It was a wet spring that we had, a delayed planting. So this fertilizer went into wet soil, and soon afterwards we got emissions occurring. 2012, completely different story, which is the reason why we do experiments over again years. Nothing almost. Very little N2O emissions. We were able to seed earlier, and it was just a drier year. You see, just in general, not much N2O, no treatment effect differences or anything. So the enhanced efficiency fertilizer products seem to shine in that wet, late spring, early growing season period for both the soils. And this just shows in 2011, this is the soil temperature when we applied. In blue, the soil temperature was already around 20 degrees centigrade at the surface, whereas in 2012, it was below 15 because of the earlier planting. And the moisture content we applied in 2011 was much higher. You can see it was ranged as high as almost 50-55% volumetric moisture, whereas around 25 in 2012, where we had no emissions. So we have this scenario here where we're having quite an interaction of the conditions at planting and fertilizer application and the enhanced efficiency products if they're working to prevent N2O emissions. So in terms of the cumulatives, in 2011 you can see the urea incorporated broadcast is the highest, the urea sideband and then urea mid-row band, and then the ESN mid-row and Super U behaving very similarly. Mid-row banded those two products compared to the checker, no nitrogen control. And in 2012, quite a different story. Emissions much lower, still 2011 Oak Bluff soil, a little bit less emissions, but the same pattern. Surprisingly, very similar pattern there. And in this 2011, there was significantly lower emissions with the ESN and Super U mid-row banded compared to the urea incorporated banded, and there was a trend for the ESN and Super U mid-row to be lower than the urea mid-row, and then also with banding in terms of concentrating the nitrogen from broadcast incorporated to side to mid-row of decreasing N2O, but not significant. Okay, it's not significant. I have to point that out. And the emission factors coincided with the cumulative emissions, where we have lower emission factors with the ESN and Super U products, much lower than the urea products. And so there's the average in terms of for 2011. And again, we see this banding effect in terms of a trend of decreasing N2O. And not much happening in 2012 at all, just low emissions factors in general because of low emissions. So the one thing that these products did is they did what they're supposed to be doing, and even the banding to the extent of metering out the nitrogen, slowing the transformation and nitrification. So this is nitrate exposure, which is the accumulation of nitrate over time and related to cumulative N2O emissions. 2011 here, you can see that the linear relationship that this is the urea incorporated, the highest in terms of nitrate presence and emissions, and down here's the control with no N, obviously going to be the lowest, and then we have the reduction in terms of the nitrate exposure, the accumulation of nitrate with the enhanced efficiency fertilizers and with the banding. So we think that nitrification is slowed down with these products and also with banding, and that resulted in lower N2O emissions. So we find great relationships with the nitrate exposure in our area. So in summary, Super U and ESN reduced N2O emissions in that wet year. So they work as insurance to keeping the nitrogen in the ground, but also reducing N2O emissions. Banning had a tendency to reduce N2O emissions in the wet year. It wasn't significant, but it is interesting because in the literature, there's opposite indication in literature that banning increases N2O. So what's happening here? I think it just tells us we don't know enough. We need to be doing more work with farm practices such as banning in terms of what's happening there. Maybe our rates are lower than others with corn that have been done. Maybe our moisture contents are different. Okay, so I think these are things that we need to be looking at. The yields are similar for all our treatments, actually, except for the check is the lowest. And so it would have been really nice to have done this experiment at less than optimal nitrogen addition rates. In hindsight, I would love to have done it around 75% of recommended nitrogen rates, because then if any of the treatments improved nitrogen use efficiency, we would have saw a change in yields. But it's one of these. You can only handle so many plots when you're doing this kind of work, right? So nitrate availability from the treatments is linked to the emissions. Again, we have lots of circumstantial evidence that shows that it's nitrification that's related with our emissions. It would be really good to examine the benefit of the enhanced efficiency fertilizer at lower rates, and I think lots of work needs to be done on the banning effects on N2O. Lots of people to thank, technicians Brad and Tim, funders, and two of the funders are here, Agrium and Koch, present here. So I thank you very much for your support of this research, and thank you very much for your for listening to my talk. So hopefully there's time to take some questions. I'll address the second one first. Yes, so with the increased salt effect in the band may result in wicking water, bringing water into the band area. I could see that happening and altering the moisture content there. In terms of the first one, we use basically what growers use. So they use just two discs to push the soil over on top of the slot, and then with packer wheels on top, actually, to press that down. So it's what the growers use. So this is what we used as well in terms of to get that slot closed up.
It's cold where you live, right?
It's colder than here, that's for sure.
And there's a fair amount of evidence that in the north doing pre-saw there can be a lot of N2O emissions.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that time of year, the year after your flood, and if there might be a delay in release with the nitrification inhibitors, or really I think with whatever we use. I don't think there could be a difference.
It's a great question. Yes, I think the obviously the winter period is very important, so the important thing would be that we want to make sure that the release from these enhanced efficiency fertilizers is of nitrogen is available to the crop when they need it to take it up. Because if they don't, then we're going to have residual nitrates going into the fall. And in our area, we have relationships with higher nitrate going into the winter, the greater the thaw emissions the following spring in March and April. So we don't want to be carrying over the nitrate. So that's why I was mentioning as well that we may have to bring down the fertilizer application rates. If our yields aren't going up with some of these products, we may be needing to bring the rates down with these enhanced efficiency fertilizer products so that we don't have lingering nitrate present. So, and at the moment, what we're doing, we're starting fall versus spring applications, an experiment across the prairies, actually, and we're looking at the fall application of these products to prevent thaw emissions. Because, yeah, so it's, it plays in very, very much so, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.